Joel Embiid takes over down the stretch for the Philadelphia 76ers to lead them to a big win in Boston. Steph Curry has 30 points and gets the Warriors a win with no Poole and no Wiggins. And the COVID protocols and rules continue to take over the NBA and the sports landscape. Lots to talk about today on the Locked On NBA podcast.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On NBA Podcast, where we talk about the latest and greatest going on around the NBA. Lots of fun action to get to from last night's games. Joel Embiid, David Ramil does not agree with me. Joel Embiid, dominant performance in Sixers-Celtics. Steph Curry has a wonderful game, a close battle between the Thunder and Grizzlies. As Ja Morant is back and playing games. Ja Morant is always fun, even when he doesn't play very well. I'm Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers, and with me is David Ramil from Locked On Heat. David, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Fantastic. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, but yet so excited to talk NBA basketball.
Yeah, unfortunately, only a 6-game slate, which for a Monday is pretty small. Usually, you know, 9 or 10 on these Monday nights. But we started off, I think, with the best game of the night in Philly versus Boston, which was a wild back-and-forth affair, really. For a while, I kind of thought that Boston was going to run away with this one. Seth Curry kept the Sixers in it for a while, but the Celtics went up by 7 points with under 5 minutes to go. It was 97-90 at the 434 mark of this game, or excuse me, 414 mark of this game after Jaylen Brown hit a three. It looked like the Celtics were about to roll, and then right. Joel Embiid just took over bucket after bucket down the stretch. Danny Green hit a huge three. And they were able to pull it off and come back. It was really impressive from the Sixers, who obviously have been down some players all season, but mostly had their team this year. But here's a crazy stat about the Sixers and how good Joel Embiid was for you, David. The Sixers won this game with one bench point. That is not a misspeak. They had 1 point from their bench from Isaiah Joe. Every other player who logged minutes off the bench for the Sixers did not score. Very impressive performance by their starters, and why I kind of always think Joel Embiid is underrated in MVP discussions. What do you think about how he played tonight?
I mean, a very good night for him, obviously. Incredible that Doc Rivers went to that starting line. I guess he didn't really have much options, many options because, you know, COVID, health, and everything else that's been impacting teams around the league forced Rivers' hand a little bit. But playing 40-plus minutes for guys like Embiid, Seth Curry, Tobias Harris, et cetera. So he had to play heavy minutes in this game, but he produced down the stretch. I thought he was going to – he actually took a hard foul early in the game, and it looked like he was shaken up a little bit. I thought he was going to be somewhat shaky after that, but no, he played through it to his credit. Embiid having a performance, a lifetime performance there, a really, really big night for him. But you know what? I have to say, despite Embiid's strong performance, the Celtics kind of messed up a little bit down the stretch. They had some costly turnovers. They just didn't have any clear indicator as to who should take over the game for them. While it was Embiid clearly who was the choice for the Sixers, for the Celtics, they were the exact opposite end of the spectrum where they just didn't have any kind of clear identity. Who was going to take over? Was it Tatum? Was it Brown? Was it nobody? Marcus Smart throws the ball three-fourths of the court and throws the ball away in a crucial possession where they were just down three. I don't know. I think the Sixers won this game, but Boston certainly did their part to help lose it too.
Yeah, Tatum didn't have it tonight. And at the end, I don't think he scored in the last 5 minutes at all. Brown scored a lot of their points in the fourth quarter. He had a pretty okay game, I thought Jaylen Brown did, but Tatum had nothing for them. And their second best fourth quarter option this game was Peyton Pritchard, who had over half his points in the fourth quarter of this game. He was excellent down the stretch for them. But when he came out for Schroeder, the Celtics were just Jaylen Brown or bust every possession. And yeah, you talk about them not having any supporting cast. They're missing both Horford and Robert Williams. So Cantor and Bruno Fernando was their center rotation in this game. Excuse me, I just said Cantor. Enes Freedom and Bruno Fernando was their center rotation in this game. And Enes got picked on a lot in pick and roll situations. And he hit a big shot that could have maybe changed the game right at the end. But other than that, kind of a low impact player in general. -3 in 40 minutes for Freedom in this one. So you know, COVID protocols and injuries just hurting the Celtics at center. And that's another reason why Embiid was able to do so well.
Absolutely, yeah, a strong performance from him. It's an interesting point in the Philadelphia season because they keep getting these big wins. They keep finding ways to pull it out. And clearly they're still missing some key components of their team, not just because of health and also because Ben Simmons is Ben Simmons and that situation has gone on for so long. And it kind of feels like with every passing game, I'm not sure that we have any clarity as to what the Sixers are going to do next. You know, it was a big discussion before the game even started on NBA TV. They were talking about whether or not there's this is already the time. It feels like we've had this discussion several times over the last few months where you feel like if the Sixers are going to be able to maximize this season, they have to be able to make a move sooner rather than later. And yet here we are, late December, and already, you know, no move seems like it's likely to take place anytime soon. Do you have any kind of indication or you know, do you feel like there's any time for the Sixers to have made this move, if not by now?
No, not really. I mean, like you said, I think that the general thought is you do it as early as possible. You don't want to waste Joel Embiid's prime, but right. Daryl Morey wants what he wants. And if those two things are at an impasse forever, I don't know if anyone can even just be guessing to predict when this will get done, given right. those two factors. You mentioned that the Sixers always show up in big games. Every time I watch them, they win. And they're 16-15. It makes no sense how their record is what it is, but they just win the big games, and those, I guess, are the ones I always tune into. Let's go to a not as big game. Bulls Rockets in Chicago tonight. And unsurprisingly, easy win for the Bulls. The Rockets lose a little bit of their luster from their big winning streak earlier this season. Christian Wood had a good game with 23, but Armani Brooks started at point guard for the Rockets in this game. He had 15-4, but they just had no point of attack defense tonight. Eric Gordon could not contain DeRozan at all. And other than that, they don't have any plus perimeter defenders really on this whole Rockets team. So huge game for DeRozan. He had 26. Huge game for Lonzo Ball, who hit 4 threes and had 19, 5, and 8. Bench guards for the Bulls. Kobe White had 24. He had some saucy plays in this game, Kobe White did. So easy Bulls win against a team they're better than. And really, they match up quite well with the Rockets. So I don't have a ton of awesome takeaways from this game besides that the Bulls are just way better than the Rockets.
That's fair. You know what? I feel like credit should be given to the Bulls because unlike other teams that we'll talk about later on throughout the show, I think they were able to kind of weather the difficult storm as far as COVID and health and safety yes. protocols and everything else like that. They were at a crucial point where their season could have completely derailed, and yet they were able to, again, handle the pressure. They were able to win some key games here and there, do just enough, and now they have their roster back and healthy, and I think they're going to be able to cruise through the rest of the – at least through the year's slate of games.
Yeah, I guess I am also writing off – this is a back-to-back for the Bulls. They played the Lakers last night as well, so – you know, that makes things a little bit more impressive. And yeah, they dealt with the COVID rulings and the COVID running through their team before the rule change that allowed for replacement players as well, right? So they had to do it with more limited resources. So credit to them for being on track. And speaking of that, one of their replacement players was the last thing in my notes. Alphonso McKinney plays 29 minutes tonight, 16 points, five rebounds. I think he's going to earn that 15th roster spot for them if he keeps playing like that. That's what these guys on the fringes, they love these spots for this exact reason. And maybe he can stick in Chicago. That'd be a pretty cool story on the good side of this bad virus still going on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's the worst way I could have phrased that possible, but I ran out of good words. So I just went with good and bad in that one, but yeah, good for the Bulls and good for McKinney. They just looked very comfortable the whole game. Last game I had tonight for our slate, over in Golden State, where it was the first home game for Steph since he broke the record in Madison Square Garden. So he got a big ovation from the crowd against the Kings. If you look at the final score of this game and you'll see 113-98 Warriors, that would not tell the story of the game very well. The Kings had a huge third quarter, which is very rare. The Warriors are an excellent third quarter team, highlighted and ignited by Buddy Hield going crazy in that quarter. And late in the third, the Kings were winning. They were up 1 point with under a minute to go. In this game, or in the third quarter, looking like they might have a chance to actually win this and come back in the second half. And then, it was all Steph in the fourth. Easy Warriors win. They're better than the Kings, especially without De'Aaron Fox. But no Poole, no Wiggins. Curry just took over this game. He was plus 16. I mean, that just nothing says his impact better than when he's in the game. They do just so well. So it was cool to see him get the ovation from the crowd, and they are just better than the Kings. They showed in the fourth, but I actually think the Kings played pretty well in this game given the resources they had.
Yeah, I mean, a nice game from Tyrese Haliburton too, right? So was it 24 points for him? Yeah, 11 assists, 4 rebounds, so solid overall game. He looked like he was engaged. He looked like he wanted to continue to make a point and try to be able to contend and keep the Kings afloat through most of the game. But, you know, like you said, the Warriors are just simply better, and the Kings, I think this is just what happens with losing teams. You face adversity, and at some point, you just you kind of just fall into the same pressure over and over again, the same kind of trap, the same bad plays, the same bad habits that you just can't seem to shake over even on a game-to-game basis. And I think they just need such a complete overhaul. We talked about this in last week's show, too. The Kings just completely as dysfunctional an organization as you're going to find around the league, unfortunately. And even though they've been winning a couple games here and there of late, just don't seem to have any clear identity at this point in time. And while they have some talent in this roster, I'm not sure how much they can be able to maximize that throughout the rest of the season.
Halliburton was excellent. They were having a fun discussion about what his ideal position is on the broadcast. And with Fox out, when he plays the one and has 24-11, sometimes it makes you think about how those young players are going to fit together. And I'd like to shout out one play before we stop talking about this game. The dagger play from Golden State. Steph Curry drives baseline, flips it behind his head to Iguodala, who goes behind his back to Otto Porter for the dagger layup. It was a sick play. It was the most Warriors. It was the most beautiful game Warriors we've seen since KD left the team to me. And that's not true at all. But it was one of the beautiful game Warriors kind of moments that you love to see with Iguodala and Curry linking up. Warriors win as they should. David, I think you have some things you want to say before we pivot to your games from tonight.
Absolutely. Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? Because it's a business scam out to get you. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel. Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. Truebill has over 2 million users and has helped save them over $100 million. You could be next. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockdownNBA. Go right now to Truebill.com/LockdownNBA. It could save you thousands of years. Who doesn't want that around the holidays? Truebill.com/LockdownNBA. But also, a reminder that BetOnline has you covered all season for more props, odds, and lines than ever before as football season continues the march to the playoffs. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use your promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus from basketball, football, the NHL, or your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON.
Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. For your second listen today, why don't you go check out either of our shows, Locked On Pacers or Locked On Heat. They actually play each other this evening, so it could be a fun way to get the latest info on both teams as they prepare for a game on national television. David had the other three games of coverage tonight. David, why don't you wax poetic to me about the Thunder versus Memphis game tonight, which turned out to be a close little battle.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty interesting one. The last time these two teams met, the Thunder were blown out by 73 points, so it was not a close game.
That.
Yeah, that was not a particularly good loss. And it looked like the Grizzlies might run away with this one. With Ja Morant back in the lineup for the first time since November 26, the Grizzlies were rolling early on. Morant was actively in playmaker mode in that first quarter, dishing out to all of his teammates. They had Desmond Bane going off for 12 early points in the first quarter. Jaren Jackson Jr. looked like he was engaged as well. They were just getting a good overall effort from them. But the Grizzlies, again, they've been very good in Morant's office. And again, that looked to be the case early on. They actually built a 16-point lead early, but then all of a sudden things started falling apart for them. The Thunder tightened up the vise a little bit. They played some pretty good defense overall. The Grizzlies just had no response offensively. They couldn't seem to get anything going. And then Morant just kind of started forcing the issue a little bit. It looked like he was just, again, trying to take over the role as a scorer now, not as much of a playmaker, and his teammates kind of responded in kind. You know that there was going to be some difficulty there, some awkwardness about trying to incorporate Morant back into the lineup. As good as he is and as good as he can do, you know, the playmaking aspect of his game, sometimes he just reverts too much to being that scorer, and I think that his teammates just couldn't seem to find any rhythm in particular Jaren Jackson Jr. He's been playing really, really well, averaging almost 20 points per game in Morant's absence. He had 15 points today in the loss. Unfortunately, he was only 5 of 15 from the floor, so he struggled in Morant's first game back. And I think that's the conversation started for me. It was a 102-99 win for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But what I took away from this game was that Jaren Jackson Jr. might be struggling a little bit finding his rhythm alongside Ja Morant. I'm not sure if a trade is necessary, but at this point in time, it just seems like you've got this big man who is as close to a unicorn as you're going to find around the NBA, right? He can do it all. He can stretch the floor. He can play it near the rim, but he's somewhat inefficient. And then he starts finding his comfort zone a little bit without Morant. And then Morant comes back into the game and he just struggles to find what his place is, where he should be fitting in that Memphis Grizzlies offense. Do you think they should try to trade away Jaren Jackson Jr. while his value is at an all-time high?
I don't think so. You know, you got to try to work it out with those two guys if you're in a market like Memphis. I mean, not right now, maybe at some point in the future, 2 years from now, when they're both making a lot of money. And if it doesn't work then, maybe you got to pivot a little bit because they'll be making a lot of money. They should be doing good things for your team instead. And they're both, you know, had more positives in this game. Like in general, the lineups with them in the game were okay, but their individual stat lines, obviously not great. And Moran after the game, apparently upset that fans were telling him to sit down because he wasn't playing well due to his injury. So interesting night for him for sure. Also, I didn't catch any of this game, David, but let's see. The Grizzlies shot better from three, shot better from the free throw line, won the rebounding better, had fewer turnovers. And they lost because they shot so poorly from two with Morant forcing the issue on the inside every so often. Well said, and a succinct summation of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, they had a nice performance on the Thunder side from Darius Bazley too. Bazley, he had four blocks too. So it seemed like not only were the Thunder, not only were the Grizzlies trying to force the issue a little bit, but the Thunder got some nice performances here and there from key players and were able to impose their will defensively to some extent. But I don't know. I think there are questions there about the Grizzlies. I've waxed poetic about them before. I really like that team. The effort they showed, particularly during Morant's absence, just wasn't there today with him there. And you expect that there's going to be some difficulty in trying to reincorporate him, but not as egregious as this to a team like the Thunder, again, who they had just beat by 73 points. But we'll move on to the next most interesting game on the slate here, which was the Utah Jazz hosting the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets, on the second night of back-to-back, they had been 0-6 prior to this game, and it looked like they were going to go quickly into 0-7. The Jazz looked really, really engaged early on. They were getting some nice shooting from pretty much everybody in the Hornets, just missed their first 8 field goals in the game, so they were really, really struggling early on. Then Gobert was fantastic. He had a pretty solid night, not as far as his field goal percentage is concerned, but he was able to get to the line 16 times and hit a career high 15 free throw attempts to go alongside 21 rebounds. There was a 28 free throw attempt disparity between the Hornets and the Jazz. Yeah, the Jazz went to the line 37 times, only 9 attempts for the Charlotte Hornets. But yet the Hornets were able to claw their way back into the game. Even though there was a big gap early on, the Hornets were able to at least take the lead for a brief time. But then the Jazz got a nice shooting performance from Jordan Clarkson, who finished with 11 points. He hit two back-to-back three-pointers to end the third quarter. And then from that point, the Jazz kept building momentum, pulling away from the Hornets there. And, they wound up winning the game 112-102. So 0-7 in back-to-back games for the Charlotte Hornets there. You know, as far as the takeaways for this game, we talked about the Bulls being able to tread water. And on the other side of this equation, I think, are the Hornets. Are they good enough? This is the question I got. Are they good enough to recover and save their season? Because they started off hot. They had this fast-paced offense. Everybody thought, oh, okay, this is going to be a sneaky, fun team. But we've seen the same issues crop up regarding injuries. Gordon Hayward, things of that sort. Terry Rozier has been somewhat inefficient. I'm not sure if LaMelo Ball is ever going to be as consistent a player as everybody wants him to be, as dynamic and great as he is. But can the Hornets find a way to save their chances at making a run for the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, this game is weird because the Jazz are up 11 less than 4 minutes into the game. And that means the Hornets outscored the Jazz for the final 44 minutes of action and lost because their start was so bad, which kind of sums up their team to me. They have some weirdness where every game they give up like a huge run to the other team. It's part of the way they play is really volatile in general. That's kind of why I don't buy their long-term perspectives right now. Like Plumlee's interior defense is so bad, right? And their system kind of funnels that way anyway. So he has so many guys coming at him all game and it doesn't really work. And like Oubre is pretty inconsistent and Miles Bridges had a hot start, which kind of helped them look awesome at the beginning. That hasn't really been there. So we know they can gel. We've seen them look good before. Like they made the plan last year. They looked awesome at the start of this season, but they're just kind of up and down in ways that are really perplexing. And that's sort of the plight of a young team, but they need to put it together if they want to be where they need to be, or at least get an adult in the room who can get them to that point.
Yeah, so that's a good point by that. Like, as far as the Jazz, I think a lot of people are looking at this win and saying, you know what, they were able to do things a little differently. They're a really, really good three-point shooting team, third best in the NBA at around 37%. On Monday night, they shot just 30% from behind the arc, and yet they were still able to, again, impose their will and kind of dictate the terms. Maybe it's just against an undermanned, tired Charlotte Hornets team, but still able to find a way to win. And I think a lot of people are looking at this as not necessarily a signature victory, but maybe evidence that the Jazz can do things a little differently. Because again, with the Jazz, it's always a question about whether or not they've solved their postseason issues. Obviously, it's still too early to tell. But as long as they're able to get this kind of performance from Gobert, I like their chances, although he is always the big question mark heading into the playoffs. But let's move on to the last game of the night. Again, on a six-game slate for the NBA on Monday night, it was a 116-92 victory for the San Antonio Spurs over the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers were welcoming back Paul George. The Clippers have lost two games in a row, but George has missed the last five games before that with an elbow strain. It was a really, really good game for DeJounte Murray. He was the story of the game for me. He was a triple-double there, 24 points, 13 assists, 12 rebounds. He's been really, really good. I didn't know that Murray was this good as far as his assists are concerned. He's fifth best in the league. I think maybe fourth best by the end of tonight, obviously because of his incredible output. So he's having a really sneakily good season. I think a lot of people are just ignoring the Spurs in general, although they've had some good wins of late. I'm not sure whether or not they're a playoff team right there, but according to the standings, they're right there. They're just a game below as far as their ability to contend for that play-in seed. They might be able to make a second half push regarding the playoffs and everything else like that. They're pretty good. The Clippers, conversely, a team that's deep. They're really, really, talented. Obviously, they've got some questions regarding the future of Kawhi Leonard. Who knows what he's going to be able to bounce back, if at all, this season. But they've just been inconsistent with guys in and out of the lineup. They welcome back Serge Ibaka tonight. They had George back, as I said. Nicholas Batum, who's been in and out, came back as well. So they've had a number of players just unable to kind of develop any kind of chemistry, any kind of consistency. And they go on a long road trip, too. So they're at an interesting pivotal point in their season where it might define whether or not they're able to even retain their seeding in the Western Conference. Of these two teams, who do you think has the better chance of holding on and continuing to progress or trend in the right direction during the second half of the season?
I'd pick the Clippers because they have the star. That generally is the driver of you can weather tough times. And Paul George has already willed the Clippers to a few wins this season. You go, how'd they win that game? No one else gave them anything. Like, their second best player was Terrence Mann or whoever it was on that particular night. He's had some games where he does that. That said, though, I mean, I've talked about this before this season. Like, Greg Popovich is able to just spin the most random rosters into like somewhat competitive and good teams. Like, he got the Spurs to the play-in last year with a younger and worse version of this exact team that they have right now. That's just what he does. And if Murray is really this guy, I think this is his third triple-double of the season already now.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't stun me that if they were able to be this consistent. Like, they shot six free throws in this whole game, 32% from deep, and yet they were able to get to the rim so well and be the 0.3 Spurs or the 0.5 Spurs, whatever the rule is called, to the extent that they can beat a decent Clippers team. So, maybe it is the Spurs. Maybe I'm being too lazy just to say the Clippers have the star and it's them, but they both kind of have a good way to say, we could keep doing this and keep our spot.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk a little bit about COVID's impact on the NBA season. One league around the world has already shut down or is likely to shut down for the next few days. So we'll talk about whether or not the NBA follows suit. But before we do that, just a reminder that you listen to podcasts for the power of knowledge, but you switch to Boost Mobile for the power of saving money. Get three unlimited data lines for $30 a month per line and a free 5G phone when you switch, so you can get the latest episodes of Locked On NBA as well as Locked On Pacers and Locked On Heat, all on one of America's largest 5G networks. More power to save. That's Boost Mobile. Free phones are limited to new customers and just one per line. Additional restrictions apply. Offers and coverage are not available everywhere or for all phones and networks. See BoostMobile.com for details.
Thank you again for making Locked On NBA your first listen today. And for your second listen, this is an interesting throw for me. Hop on over to Locked On NHL or any NHL show, because that's what we're going to lead off this segment talking about. Is the NHL is going to briefly halt their season as coronavirus is surging around the United States. And starting on Wednesday, so for you listening tomorrow, or if you're listening the day this comes out tomorrow, they will stop play and practice until Sunday when players re-return, and then games for the NHL will resume on Monday the 27th. So just a brief five-day stoppage where they just say, everybody, go home, go away, and stop, you know, being together in these big crowds together. And, you know, around the holidays, I don't know what kind of effect that's going to have in general, but you know, that they are doing something. The NHL is trying something to slow this down, and that is why this discussion leads to the NBA, where they've already done some steps to slow the spread of this around the league and, you know, add replacement players and more testing and things like that. But do you feel like the NBA could be headed to a pause like this, or is this something unique to the NHL in their time of the season?
It feels like that would be the natural course for the NBA. They've always kind of felt like, you know, we're the leaders when it comes to progressive actions and things of that sort. They were the first league to shut down back in mid-March last year. You know how active they've been with their testing. They've kind of set the bar very high for other sports leagues around the world. And yet, I don't see a pause coming for this particular iteration of the NBA. I feel like we keep seeing more and more players, some stars, some not, just, you know, not even considering a point that was brought up on today's NBA TV broadcast. You know, staff, trainers, coaches, everybody else that's been impacted and has entered the league's health and safety protocols, as well as their families that might be impacted to some degree. And yet the league just doesn't feel like they're likely to shut down. Certainly not before Christmas, as you and I were talking about. You brought up a good point. Look, they're going to carry this through Christmas because that's their big day. That's the NBA holiday of note. They want to be able to put on their full five-game slate on Christmas Day, and I don't think they're going to be able to shut down. You know, we saw what happened last year, right? You know, with the season, the shortened season of the bubble ended, and they were able to rush through the schedule to make sure they got games before Christmas. So
right.
I don't think a pause is likely to happen at any point soon, certainly not within the next week or two. But I don't know what to do next with this, because even the NHL's move, as much as it feels like, well, we're doing something and it's progressive to some degree, it's not exactly a solution. You know, you're having players go back to spend time with friends and family over the holidays, which they absolutely should. But yet that's how the COVID virus spreads. So it's anything. Like, you're kind of throwing them out there, and I know you don't want them mixing with your other players and mixing with your coaches and things of that sort, but, you know, the virus is going to keep spreading no matter what we do, because as a country, I think we're not necessarily doing enough, too. So that's a lengthy discussion, and I'm not sure if this is the right forum for it, but at the same time, it's like, it seems more futile than anything else, and I applaud the league for, you know, doing whatever they can to initiate some change and making some alterations to rosters and allowing teams some flexibility to add players and things of that sort. But no, I don't see a shutdown or even a pause anytime soon.
Yeah, the NHL was at, according to the Washington Post article about their pause, roughly 15% of the NHL players were in NHL COVID protocols as of Monday when they announced that they would be pausing for a few days. And so the NBA is over that, I believe. I think they're well over that. They're closer to 20. I think they hit their 100th player of the season, or excuse me, they're close to that 15% number, but they hit their 100th player in protocols of the season just yesterday or 2 days ago. So yeah. Numbers wise, they're kind of close to the same path. But like you said, you know, I don't know what went into the NHL's thinking specifically about this time of year, but the NBA's response to Christmas and New Year's was not, let's send everybody home, because that might be the same outcome. They're still going to be in crowds. Theirs was increased testing for everybody, so we know what the scope of this is in our league at this time. And maybe their increased testing, I believe, ends in the NBA on January 8th. If it's still running wild through the league, maybe then is the time you consider your pause and see what other solutions there can be outside of what you've already tried to implement and do in your league. But yeah, I don't think the NBA is going to pause because of the timing of the calendar right now, and because they've already done other steps to prevent a pause, right? They've already said, we're going to change our testing protocols. They've already said, we're going to have replacement players that Not you can have, you have to have replacement right. players. We want our product to be good and have as many players available as possible. So
good.
Yeah. Air quotes around good for sure there. But it seems like the NBA is at least trying to take the steps to not have a pause happen. And I don't think they would go from let's have all these meetings to prevent a pause to all right, let's stop that quickly. I think they'll take a little bit of time at least before that happens.
Right. Yeah. This isn't mid-March of last year where when Rudy Gobert was the first positive case and nobody knew what was going to happen next. And they certainly were trying to curtail its spread around the league. You know, they did what they possibly could. And of course, that wound up leading to several month shutdown and then the initiation of the bubble. The bubble's not happening for everybody that keeps suggesting it. It's just one, it's too expensive. I don't know that they can't get all 30 teams behind it. So it's never going to happen. They need the revenue that fans provide, which is also part of the problem because you're inviting 19,000 fans per game every day. And, you know, that's not necessarily going to curtail the spread of COVID either. So they're in a tough spot right now where they have to make some kind of determination and they may just wind up allowing asymptomatic players that have tested positively to continue playing. I'm not sure if that's the right move either, but that's something that's been discussed internally. We'll have to see how it all plays out. It's a scary time for everybody. And as far as the league is concerned, they're trying to do what they can to tread water in very precarious, dangerous waters here. But hopefully everybody's able to stay healthy and everybody's been able to bounce back and you know, ride this out because it's going to be a very, very difficult season yet again. I don't think it's going away. Certainly COVID is not going anywhere. It's just a matter of mitigating its impacts and preventing the loss of life and risking anybody's health needlessly.
I agree with all that. And all these discussions are always me basing my data points off of what other decision makers have made because I'm not an epidemiologist and I don't have all the data the NBA has regarding how COVID has impacted their league and its fans. But given what I do know, I can say what the league maybe should consider, what they might do in the future. So we'll see what if anything comes out of this or changes. You know, it seems like it's changing every day. So Me saying, oh, here's the stuff they've done could not matter as soon as tomorrow or the next day. But it sure seems like if another big major sports league is willing to take a step like a pause, that could be at least a domino for other leagues doing so. So we'll see. You have any other closing thoughts on this?
Not really. I just hope that everybody does what they can out there. Look, the league is trying to get as vaccinated as possible. And while people will keep pointing to the vaccination rates and saying, well, how could they still be testing positive? That's not how that works. Please do your research. If we're not the right source of information, because neither of us are epidemiologists, find out from epidemiologists exactly what you can do to prevent the spread of COVID. Yeah, I'm sure the league is doing what they can, and so should you.
Yeah, I would suggest not using two basketball podcasters as your COVID guide, but you know, of course, do your own thinking there. Thank you for listening to Locked On NBA today. Check out Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling for the best and latest in the betting world as you go forward. Tomorrow it's back to Wednesday show, with John Corrales and Jake Madison, so stay tuned for that big fun slate tomorrow of NBA games on TNT. Thank you for listening and have a great rest of your day.